This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, wishing everybody listening a happy new year. Hope you all got a great start to the new year. And I want to say that especially during this time of the year with our year-end awards just couple of days ago, actually, this really feels like where we are the closest to you, the listeners. We get all your votes in, and we will have that once more with the half-year awards. But it really feels like that we are really growing closer to our listeners. I'm really happy about that. So happy new year to you as well, Dylan.
Happy new year, man. Not just to you, but all the listeners. I was so psyched for our year-end award show that we had, all the votes that we had, all the representations. You know, I counted everything up, and it was
I saw that. Great work.
Yeah. And I put it out there, too. But yeah, it's like so many different votes for different people, different wrestlers, different companies. It's like every style was represented, too. I love that. That's the thing that I think makes our show so special. And obviously, in the new year, like you said, this is going to be a busy time just in terms of all the wrestling going on. I think not just the fact that there is a lot of wrestling. I mean, one leads to the other, kind of. I think this is a reason why. But I think a lot of people now, new year, maybe they're trying to make some changes. Maybe they're trying to change which wrestling promotions they want to watch, they want to give chances to. And now we're seeing that, where we're seeing a lot of people check out maybe an All Japan show that's on, or the Big Noah show that happened, where we're going to talk about all that stuff. But in the start of the new year, it feels like people are more apt to do different things. So I'm really psyched about that, really happy about that as well, overall. So hopefully everything can win everybody over. I don't know if all of the matches we've seen on these shows won everybody over, but I think that a lot of people have open minds, at least. And with Wrestle Kingdom coming up right around the corner, you know, everybody is going to get the chance to see the biggest show as well. Lots of big predictions going on there. We'll talk about that in a few days after it happens, obviously. But besides that, hopefully everybody out there is safe. That's the most important thing. Not to start things on a downer note, but I do have to say a shout out to Damar Hamlin. If any of the NFL American football fans know, there was this tragic thing that happened last night, you know, with this guy. He went to cardiac arrest on the field. They had to cancel the game because of this. And I was just so shook by it, you know, and it made me think not just in football, but all the contact sports that we have. And obviously wrestling is what this show is about. And I've done both. I was a quarterback in school and obviously wrestling. And to think about that tragic event happening, and they've got him stabilized from what we know. We're still waiting for updates, hopefully by the time he gets in. But I really want to shout out somebody in wrestling. There is a wrestling tie into this, but Jericho from AEW, it came out that he made a big donation to his toy drive, $10,000, after this happened.
So great from him. Actually, gave me a little laugh too, because on the first donation he spelled his name wrong, and so he just said, "Ah, come on, another $5,000."
Yeah, exactly. Like that was a very cool thing. And like I said, I just hope that brother wakes up to get some positive news for his toy drive, getting over $3 million in donations. And you know, a lot of the players are there. But it got me thinking, you know, it's like, I think that's something that we all sometimes take for granted as fans, is just how dangerous these physical contact sports are. And obviously I've had a lot of injuries myself, but now you see something like this that nobody could have ever expected or anticipated. And you just see that. You see these guys in wrestling do all of these insane moves and stuff, and physical acts and feats and stunts at times, even. and just to see the danger that wrestling exists. And, you know, I just want to start the year off saying I'm really thankful to everybody, even if it's somebody that I'll end up hating on very soon. You know, I just want to say for real, though, to all the wrestlers out there, anybody who takes the time to bump, you know, take these risks and just trying to live your dream and hopefully have a good time and have success along the way. But I do want to say thank you to all the pro wrestlers out there, if any of y'all are listening, for taking those risks. Because like I said, I've been there. You know, like I said, I think sometimes just as fans, we all take for granted a little bit the inherent danger of this thing. But a big shout out to DeMar Hamlin and obviously all of the players in those sports and obviously all the wrestlers out there doing big things. And hopefully that's my main wish for the new year more than anything else, is that everybody makes it through safe without any major injuries or anything like that. So that's really what I'm thinking right now. I want to have a good year for everybody involved and definitely in wrestling. No major injuries. That's my main thing I'm rooting for this year.
Amen to that, I guess. I don't have anything more to add to what you just said. So we are going to turn to the wrestling side. We had a bunch of topics here that we want to go over in a rapid fire sense at first. We'll see how we proceed with that. First, of course, going back to our last episode, you and I, we both mentioned Shuri and Julia as our rivalry of the year, giving the rivalry the benefit of the doubt because we recorded the day before the show actually happened. And in the end, the match turned out to be a true spectacle and a very, very good closure of this entire feud, of this feud that has been going on for over a year. And I think both of our votes were completely justified. What did you think about the match, and how did you experience this final blow-off?
Well, I did experience by you know, the show. I watched the whole show. I did. Me and Sandre, we did a review of the show on the Eastern Lariat Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat out there. We had a lot of fun doing that, obviously. A lot of fun talking about the whole show as well. The main event, though, was obviously the one that everybody was talking about afterwards. And, I mean, there's been so much said on it, I said on the show, and I even made a thread on Twitter about it. But to me, like, this has to be considered one of the best matches of, like, the last decade, at least. I think that they were able to do something that I don't think a lot of matches I've really been able to do or accomplish, where they didn't just first of all, one thing I loved about it is that one of the things that I have criticized Stardom for in the past year or two, ever since really Bushiroad came over, is I thought that there was way too much influence stylistically from New Japan's style of wrestling, where yes, things were a little bit more leaning towards their style in a lot of ways from where they were before. But in this match, it's like they took all the good parts from that and cut out all the bad stuff, you know, pretty much, like the meaningless limb work, and, you know, that something will happen for the first 15 minutes of the match and never go anywhere. They didn't do that crap. They went right away into the big moves, and then even with the great pace that they had and the great action that they had really from the start of the match, they were able to escalate it in a completely unique way to where they didn't just have a match. They didn't just have a blow-off match to their rivalry. It was even bigger than that. And it wasn't even the biggest, you know, it wasn't just the blow-off to their rivalry. It wasn't the blow-off to this year-long title reign that was very special for Shuri Kondo, obviously. But they incorporated Julia's entire career arc into this one match in a way that was so special, where you had her going in from the beginning with the work they did with Shuri, then bringing out the tribute to Hana Kimura with the Tiger Lily. She used every one of Donna Del Mondo's finishers moves, like the faction that she leads. If you're not familiar with Stardom, that's her group. And actually, her gear was comprised of all of the styles of the group, you know, Himika, Maika, Mai Sakurai, and Tekla. So she was able to bring all of that together. And in the end, you saw the dramatic ending with Shuri reaching out to Julia, you know, their former friends. And then at the end, obviously, the emotional aspect of it. People were in tears. It was crazy. It was everything that I figured it would be, but then also even more than I thought it would be. with all of the way they handled that, and Julia especially, and just a perfect ending to this title reign. Perfect start for Julia, to getting the title wrapped around her waist, and then Donna Del Mondo lifting her up. Like I said, it was really the perfect ending to all of this, and the perfect beginning to Julia's title reign, which should be an epic. You know, if we're making predictions, you know, this isn't an award show. We're not handing out the year-end awards in the first show of the year. That would be silly. But if we were making, you know, prognostication, so to speak, I have to say she would have to be a clear early favorite for MVP, just with all of the matches. We talked about this on the Patreon show. It's like this title win comes in, but suddenly they're already building. They have like a dozen matches in their back pocket that they could reasonably go to with this title reign, to where it's just an amazing thing that they've done, I would say, on the red belt overall. The show itself, we had some thoughts on there. I didn't think it was the perfect show overall, but the main event was like, that to me is a classic match that we'll remember as long as Julia is around in wrestling. You know, when we look back at the end of her career, I think we'll be going back to this match, and I think it has that kind of legacy to it.
Absolutely. And sometimes in wrestling, there are these moments that, as a fan, you clearly anticipate the one person to win. But sometimes there are bookers that think, maybe we can milk this a little longer. Like, for example, we've talked lengths about the Okada versus Naito deal years ago, where they missed the perfect moment. And in this case, Stardom luckily did not miss this perfect moment that they had built up for over a year, and they just went with it, and everybody was buzzing about it. And I also want to put over the selling of both women. I thought it was just absolutely tremendous how they went through this match, and how after 20 minutes, the progress in the match, you could really see how the physical effect of all the big moves wore down on both Julia and Shuri, and how they, in the end, really had a tough time to just walk around and to just lift the other one up for another big move. And especially after the match, I thought it was so crucial and important how Shuri wasn't able to stand up. And Julia was standing there. They had this shot where they showed the ref in the middle, Julia on the right and Shuri on the left. And Julia was standing while Shuri was still on her knees and couldn't really get up. It took her long to even lift herself up and to look Julia in the eyes. And then, of course, she also strapped her with a belt, which is another great moment. Always a great moment when somebody does that, with a passing of the torch moment. So yeah, much like you said, it was an incredible moment.
Yeah, like I honestly don't think I would change anything about it. Like, no. I think it was honestly like a perfect match, like the definition of it. I wouldn't change a single thing about how they did it. It was even better than I had anticipated, and I just think that they are both just tremendous, tremendous performers. In all honesty, like Shuri and Julia have to be considered two of the top, you know, wrestlers anywhere, any company. Women, men, whatever, they are near the top. I would put both of them up in that category. And they're both extremely special talents. And I think that they showed that. They had a lot of passion, a lot of great emotion. And the wrestling itself was just an amazing deal. You know, it's funny you mentioned the moment where New Japan missed with Naito. And I think that's something we always call back to. And that's the crazy thing about all of this when I think about it. Like, that was, you know, we talked about it. There was so many great moments that we talked about. That was one of the best categories, in my opinion, of the year in the award show, because there were so many amazing things to choose from. You know, you had, Jungle and Kyoko wrestling, Fujita Hayato's return from cancer, Takeda coming back after his wife died, Jun Kasai's promo to Desperado. It's like, these are these amazing life-changing moments, right? That you look at where it truly impacted their lives and showed how amazing wrestling is to have that power. In terms of a story moment, like a pure wrestling moment, that Julia and Shuri had to be the best one of the year, I feel like the best done one. And I think it's so interesting because the tragic part about this is that it's not like Stardom rewrote the book with this rivalry and buildup. This is what wrestling should be. Where
exactly. That's why I said it. It's so obvious, and it's you have part one, you have part two, you put them together, and in the end you get a result and you profit from it.
But they also had to have the patience to let this play out. Because even in Shuri's title reign, so there were some people that were saying, oh, Shuri's title reign is getting stale because it lasted too long. But actually, the purpose of it was clearly, like, this end game was in mind from the beginning of all of it. It's so clear that was going to happen this way. And I think everybody knew it, and especially after Julia won the tournament, I think everybody with any kind of knowledge of Stardom knew that this was going to happen. But it's so simple to do it. I think that I've always said that, too, or at least I haven't always said it, but the past year especially, it's kind of been a revelation to me, where I think we as fans and everything, sometimes people just try to overcomplicate everything and talk themselves into different things that, you know, that the companies don't believe is true. Stardom knew that Shuri was awesome. They knew that Julia was going to be the top star eventually. They did what they wanted to do because they believed in them. There was no, runaround or, sudden obstacle that nobody could have imagined, no swerve. You know, compare Julia's journey to Kaito Kiyomiya's. We're going to talk about him at Noah on top as the champion. And there is no comparison. Like, one company did the right thing, and the other company, we always have to convince ourselves that they believe in him, even though it's clear that even now I don't think they still don't believe in him, to be honest, as the top guy. But that was Julia.
It wouldn't completely surprise me if he just lost the title in the next go-around. I wouldn't be shocked.
It depends on who the next challenger is, but I definitely think...
That's so crazy, when it always depends on who the next challenger is, that you just completely stop believing in this guy.
Exactly, but it's because they stopped believing in him first, and Stardom never stopped believing in Julia, and they should never stop believing in Julia, because she's amazing, and Kaito is amazing, as we'll talk about, and that shows the flaw there. But it's not just him, there's all kinds of guys littered throughout these companies that you could go to and say, oh, it was so-and-so's time, but they turned away from it. You could, even with the women, when Maki Ito got hot, Tokyo Joshi Pro turned away from her. And, we saw where that went, where they're at now after their title reigns. And you see where Stardom is now with Julia and how much better it is. You could go to New Japan. You mentioned Naito. There's other cases of guys that they went on the runaround and then they never got to where they should have with them, whether it's Noah, All Japan, New Japan, other companies, you can point to pretty much anybody. But this storyline was like, this is what wrestling should be. Every company should want to do something like this with the people they want to lead the company forward overall. And I think that's the craziest part of all of this, was that this was not some overly complicated deal. They just did what wrestling should be. And that's why it came across so great. And hopefully, I know that it's not going to happen, but I hope that these other companies learn some lessons from this storyline and the success of it, particularly. And they'll be hard pressed to do a match this good, but they can at least book things this good and give the fans something to believe in, someone to believe in. And hopefully that does happen in all the other companies, I think. And they all have the potential to do it. They just choose, or they're too incompetent to do what they should do, unfortunately.
Yes, a great draw as well in Sumo Hall with 3,868 fans. And they announced for April 23rd this year that they will go to the Yokohama Arena. So they will be stacking the deck, I think, for this one. And they will get as many influences from all over the Yoshi scene into this show to make it as profitable and as great as it can be. And of course, I'm expecting that Julia will be on top of that show, and we'll see what they have in store for us there.
Yeah, that show was actually the biggest, the most number of fans that they did besides the Yuzupon retirement show. This was like 10 years ago that they had. And, I think that it's going to get even bigger next year, to be honest, as restrictions lighten up in a lot of these companies. The show in April, that's very important to Stardom, because if you follow Stardom and know about history of Joshi, they're very much in the boat of taking a lot from All Japan Women, Zinjo, like the classic wrestling company, the Joshi Wrestling Company. So they take a lot from them. That show is actually the 30th anniversary of Dream Slam, which is one of the most famous Joshi shows in All Japan Women history. And in that show, that was built around, I mean, we're talking about getting into the interpromotional era, which is one of the golden eras of Joshi in general and probably wrestling anywhere, to be honest. So I highly anticipate that there's going to be a lot of different companies jumping in on that, and we're already seeing it. And yeah, that's one thing that I like seeing also. I mean, I've said it in New Japan too, but especially in Stardom, we're seeing it. They are much, much more open to working with other Joshi companies at the moment than they were even 3 or 4 years ago. And I think we're going to see that play out on that show as well.
And it's incredible. At first, they had this kind of approach where they isolated themselves from the scene with the idea that you could only see the Stardom talent at a Stardom show. But you can clearly see that this kind of working relationship between Stardom and other companies, I mean, you see Unagi Sayaka going to a bunch of different companies in the last couple of months. This has clearly benefited every side that is involved in this journey right now. So, yes, I'm much like I said, I'm expecting things here to fall into pieces like that. The pieces falling into the parts, or however you say it.
Yeah, fall in place, yeah.
Exactly. And you can see it here with Haruka Umasaki being in the semi-main of this big Stardom Sumo Hall show. So expect more from that.
Yeah, absolutely. We will see a lot more in the coming weeks and months, I'm sure.
So that much for Stardom. That was on the 29th of December, and on the same day there was a big DDT show in Tokyo Dome City Hall. Yudonen already did a complete review of the show with Yannick on our Patreon, so we'll not go over the entire show. Just want to mention that I was a big fan of the Shihiro Hashimoto versus Shinya Aoki match, and while it was a different match, the atmosphere of it and the style and also of course the length as well reminded me of this great match between Katsushi Sakuraba and Katsuyori Shibata years ago at Dominion, which was one of the greatest matches of that year. And I completely loved the chemistry between Hashimoto and Aoki. Thought they worked so well together. Aoki, I think he's tremendously underrated too when it comes to professional wrestling, because he just has this great mind for it. He just isn't there a lot because he also does MMA still. But here he was great, even putting over Hashimoto, and that was the main takeaway that I had from that. With such a big win, Hashimoto should really be in line for something big if she returns to DDT this year, and I was clearly looking at her versus Katsusada Higuchi eventually, Dylan.
I don't know if that'll happen, but I mean, that would be a pretty interesting match. Yeah. You know, if they did that, that would be cool if they did it. And speaking of, not to go back to Stardom, but it looks like she's going to be in Stardom too, facing yes. Shuri afterwards. So I think that will be a real money match, I would say,
sure.
Overall. But yeah, I mean, she'd be great versus any person alive, I would say, like any wrestler overall. Yeah, she's awesome. Aoki, like, I said this kind of on the show, where I feel like he has flashes of being a great wrestler, but I don't know if he's always there, like putting his all into it when it comes to a DDT. But in this match, I thought he definitely had a really good performance overall. And yeah, that was a lot of fun match. And Chihiro, again, fantastic performer in every company she works for.
Yeah. As for the main event, Higuchi defending against Yuki Ueno in 28 minutes. This was, it was still a great match, I would say, but this was one of the lesser ones that I would rate Katsuzada Higuchi matches at in recent months. I mean, I love the Konosuke Takeshita one, the Yoshimura one where he won the title, the Sakaguchi one, and we put that over in our year-end awards. I thought this one was very good, but to me, I don't know, there was this final spark missing that I was looking for in this match that would have put the match over to me. I don't know how to really phrase it. I felt there was something missing. I just can't point my finger on it.
Well, I personally completely agree with you, to be honest with you. I also think that a lot of the Higuchi, his title reign up to this point had been booked pretty much perfectly, just in terms of the matches they had, because every single one of his matches were some kind of personal emotional deep for him.
And
like where, you know, you had Yoshimura obviously his partner and him winning the title for the first time. That was one of the, like, you know, the people considered one of the best moments of the year. You had Endo, him beating the champion who never lost the title in Peter Pan, as well the biggest show of the year for DDT. Then you had Takeshita, the true ace of the company that he had to overcome. And then Sakaguchi, which calls back to his past with Eruption and, like, almost you know, portraying him as a mentor of sorts overall. But I think that the Ueno match didn't really have that hook to it overall. But it was still, the work itself was really good. I would say, like, these two are very talented guys, and they ended things in a good way. And I think we also have to praise, because I think this has been a big problem during his title reigns, where it's critically acclaimed, but actually a box office bust.
Yes.
But this was actually a bigger show, like, for them, where they sold out here. And, like, this was good signs of what I said before when we talked about that. I said they need to not worry about that. Keep going. And eventually, this will all pay off into you. The fruits of your labor of building this guy will pay off.
And much like I said with Shuri before that, with the title reign that she had, sometimes pro wrestling bookers just look at the metrics they get, they look at the numbers they get, and sometimes the plan that they laid out that sounded very good in the first place isn't supported by the numbers, and the people, they get nervous, and sometimes they'll just pull the plug from a story or a guy on top, a champion on top, that actually is pointing into a good direction. And Higuchi, I mean, you heard what Michelle said about him, that he demands attention when he's coming out to the ring. And yes, the numbers weren't there, but I was really, really happy for him that this time he was part of a main event that had this great draw. And I think he really needed that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. The Shuri one, I mean, all the numbers were so good that nobody was scared. Sure. And same thing with Naito in New Japan. It's like there were no numbers you can point to that said he didn't deserve to be the champion. Maybe something akin to Mara Fuji's first title reign in Noah, like 2006, where they famously switched away from him after the one show didn't do that good with Kenta, I would say. But we have seen that before plenty of time where people will panic. Sometimes, like I said, sometimes bookers are just really incompetent, unfortunately. But in this case, I think they've done a good job with him. And I think that it's possible that Ueno is a guy that people still have a little bit of interest in just because his year wasn't that great. Or at least it was a step back from where they were. I mean, a lot of the company took a step back, in my opinion, from where they were even a year ago. But he was right near the top of the list of that guy who looked like the wrestler of the year for a lot of, you know, 2021 and 2022. He just wasn't doing a lot of interesting things. But now that they gave him this shot, it showed that the fans will ride with him somewhat. And, you know, you had that title situation where it was title versus title. Not title versus title, but champion versus champion with only Higuchi's title on the line. But I think a lot of things came together and did good. And it, like I said, it was really – this show was built off of that match. You know, it wasn't like there was a strong card underneath it, even though I ended up liking the show, actually, you know, just on the undercard. I think it was one of the better undercards in total outside of maybe like there were a couple of matches that disappointed me before the main event. But overall, this was not a star-studded card, you know, overall. Like, there wasn't a big drawing match. Even your stars with Takeshita and Sekimoto were in that kind of meaningless tag match, like, overall. So – they really deserve the credit, in my opinion, Higuchi and Ueno, for this. And Higuchi did another great job. It was a good power versus speed match. I kind of said it would be like an 8 out of 10 match. It's the match everybody would be happy with. But obviously, when you compare it to the other matches in Higuchi's reign that had that emotional connection more, this came up a little short of that. But still, I'm happy that they did good numbers. It was still a really good match. And I still have a lot of hopes for Higuchi's title reign going forward, at least for the next few months.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, they slotted Tetsuya Endo in the mid-card for right now. He is now the new KOD six-man tag team champion alongside Kotaro Suzuki and Yusuke Okada, winning his first championship belt ever in his career.
In a great match for the record. Yes. I love that match. That was like right up there with the main event to me. I thought it was way underrated by some people. I thought that was a really strong match.
Yes, it was really good. It was a really good match. And, of course, you had Jun Akiyama in a title match, but, of course, with Super Zazadango Machine in this comedy match that I enjoyed very much. So,
Action figure battle.
Yeah, it was great. But, like you put it, you put that out on your Patreon review as well, with Takeshita and Sekimoto being in this tag match that in the end was supposed to put Yukio Naya over, and he did get the pinfall over RSP. But the match itself was kind of underwhelming, and it didn't really feel like Sekimoto and Takeshita were completely in for the ride.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Was it motivation? What, you know, was it just a bad night? Did somebody get, you know, maybe just ate a bad pre-show meal or something? Like, what was the explanation for this? Because, yeah, that was really disappointing. I mean, with these four in the ring, and, like, RSP's the guy that it seems like it is the most fired up for it, I feel like something went wrong.
Along this line. Because Takeshita was much better on the Toshikoshi Pro Wrestling Show on the 31st, on the New Year's Eve show.
Oh, yeah.
He seemed much more on fire on that one.
I honestly think this was, like, the worst Takeshita performance I could ever remember seeing. Like, because almost every other time he's been awesome and very varying levels of great. And I thought he actually was kind of below average in this match. Like, him and Sekimoto didn't have good chemistry for whatever reason.
No.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. Because they're both
great. I mean, Sekimoto, he's been going long, and we've said that before about him. He completely changed his style in the last couple of years, of course, due to his body just not being able to do what he did 15 years ago anymore, and that's just natural. And I think that he changed his style greatly. He's now using much more of a ground-based offense. He has made the stretch muffler into one of his finishing holds. So he's just not the guy anymore that used to be the one that threw big bombs. He will do it eventually, much like we saw at the New Year's Eve show, but he's just not the guy that can hold up these matches night in and night out. So maybe he was not the right choice for this match, whereas you mentioned RSP was very motivated here in this one. So we'll have to wait and see how that develops with Takeshita being in AEW and DDT simultaneously, whereas Naya got the big win here, ending the year on a good note after losing in the finals of the D-King Grand Prix, so all good for him this year.
Yeah, definitely a strong, most improved candidate, and we'll see what happens with him going forward.
That is true. And one day after they ran Tokyo Dome City Hall, DDT, Great also ran the same arena, drawing a little less. So DDT at 1,207, Great drew 1,051 fans to their show, once again, exclusively on YouTube. That is one of the big pluses of this promotion, that you can just watch this show for free on YouTube. The show, though, has some mixed reactions to it. We, for example, at Catchment, we have only 5 ratings right now. There is 2 that rated it 9 out of 10, but there is also 1 that gave it a 4 out of 10. Where do you stand?
Well, I'm definitely in between those two ratings, I would say. overall, I think that's a pretty extreme on both ends.
Both ends, yes.
Yeah. And I kind of mentioned this on the pre-show. I guess they're just trying to be a promotion where there's something for everybody, you know, because you see a lot of different styles. You know, they did have a couple of UWF rules matches in the undercard. You had a Joshi Pro Res match where you had Iwata and Suzuki versus Michiko Miyagi and Maya Fukuda. They always have the Joshi
match. I loved that match, by the way. I think Maya Fukuda is such an incredible talent. And she got this win here with the KO that she was so surprised about, that she was so happy. And I just think that there are great things that lie ahead of her in her career. And they just have to focus on her in this women's division that they have.
And that was a great payoff to like what they've been doing a long time with her, of her always losing and then finally coming up with the win. Yeah, that match was really great, to be honest. For especially for what it was. I mean, it was like a 6-minute match, but it was very, like, so enjoyable to watch. The UWF matches, I thought, were both pretty good. The Aoki Ito match was okay. Like I said, I didn't think it was great, no pun intended.
No, I thought it was good, but they are falling in the same traps that Big Mouth Loud had with Shibata back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
That they put Ito against all these guys from the outside. I mean, last year they put him against Shuji Ishikawa. Now they put him against Shinya Aoki. He often is the guy to face the outsiders, and rarely he wins those matches. So it's really hard for the guy to get to a position where you can be looked at as a true star when he's just not able to win these matches. They put him in front position when they opened the show. He got the mic time. He welcomed the fans to the show, and that's good and all. But ultimately, especially still in Japanese wrestling, you become a star not by talking on the mic, but by your performances in the ring. And of course, he's good, but that doesn't really cut it in the end if this guy is really slated to become a top star of this group. They need guys that he can go over. And they'll find them within their own company, of course. But if he's always put against these outsiders, he needs to beat someone coming in. That is a big problem, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that, to be honest. If they want him to be, if they're serious about him being the top star, they need to start getting behind him a little better, I would say. But, you know, like I said, it was okay, that match. I'd like to see more from Ito, even performance-wise, to be honest. Like I said, I think that the other two in the UWF match are actually better than him in the ring, to be honest. And unfortunately, like, Iizuka lost again by knockout, but this feeds my argument of him being most underrated continually. But because the thing is, not only that, but it's like, we went through all this, you know, rigmarole over Ito, and, like, Iizuka loses again, and, like, all he's done is lose this year.
Right.
And from 35 seconds or 37 seconds or however long it was in March, and now loses again at the end of the year, the same guy. So, but the match was good, I would say, like, definitely the better of the two. Yeah, yeah, this, you know, this funky, like, you know, indie match. you know, where you had, like, Gringo Loco there, which I was pleasantly surprised by, or amused, I would say, to be more accurate. They bring, like, the most random indie people.
Just in this match, right?
Just Gringo
Loco, Jack Cartwheel, Septimo Dragon, all these guys are in there. Cartwheel has been there before, though.
So still, is
Greg. Yeah, right. But it was a fun match. Just going back to the Isuri and Iizuka match, I really thought that it was a great UWF Rules match. It was really unfortunate that this wasn't the time limit draw, because I could have watched these guys go 15. And to be honest, I don't think that any of these two could afford a loss at this point in at the end of this year. So I would have loved them to go 15 and take their rivalry to the next year.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very, like, new age style of UWF match, too.
Right.
It wasn't like the old school, like, UWFI or Rings.
No, like they moved quick.
Yeah, well, they did stuff that was, like, unrealistic as well.
Hey, Dylan, I've seen what's his name? Axiom right now in NXT. I've seen him win Ambition with a Spanish fly years ago, so I've seen it all in shoot style wrestling.
Well, he's a great wrestler, but maybe not in shoot style, to be honest. But yeah, you know, so yeah, I like that match. But again, the point is, they're all different stuff. So you have that like indie kind of lucha influenced match. You got the big guys, Quiet Storm and Hartley Jackson. You know, a quick loss for Hartley. Former Spirit of Ganbare champion, unfortunately, not getting a lot of shine there. You had the comedy match with Luigi Primo and Shima. They're doing their thing on there. You got the tag, which is a multi-man match, like, you know, all the different factions against each other.
It was a fun match.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad match at all. It was actually a pretty good match, you know.
The Tani guy, he really has something, and I really hope that they can secure his work for next year, because that could really be someone that could become a star within their ranks.
Very interesting backstory, starting in Mexico, mm-hmm. despite being Japanese, and now coming in very Doki-esque
yes.
kind of run here. But I really liked him and Flamita as a team. I think they're a really good match for each other. And Yutani, yeah, I definitely could see him being a guy that they could get behind in the near future. I also think Tamura is a guy that I've said this before, that he feels like he kind of has a star aura to him that I don't think a lot of other guys on the roster have. I think he just carries himself in a certain way that makes it seem like a big deal. I know they did a deal where Onitsuka left Stronghearts after this show as well, so that may be the end of the line with him and Yuri as a team, but I like them both as well. So that was a good match, like you said, probably one of the better ones of the show. You had the New Japan guys coming in. That's been a fixture this year. The New Japan guys coming in, where you have in this one it was Bushi and Sonata, and they took on Hayashi and T-Hawk. You know, decent match, I would say. Not anything spectacular. And then the main event was another great Lindemann title defense, where he took on Kaito Ishida in what I thought was a really strong match. You know, I really think that, Lindemann just in-ring is probably one of the most consistent champions, you know, of any company. To me, I probably would have flipped the title here, to be honest with you. It felt like Ishida had a lot of momentum coming into to the company. But, I mean, Lindemann, as a fan, I like watching all of his matches. So, it's probably not the best for business, with, you know, what they've done with him. But I will always live with these great title matches here. So, yeah, really strong match. Hopefully, Ishida gets some good things coming this year.
Really enjoyed that one, too. Thought it was a good main event. It was just great to see these guys doing their shtick. This is a match that pretty much is straight out of Dragon Gate. Could have been a Dragon Gate Kobe World main event at one point. Question is, where is Lindemann's title run leading to? He's been champion. He's been the first champion since February of last year. He's had, until this point, 7 title defenses. The question is, where is this leading? Who is going to step up? Is it going to be, for example, Tamura? Is someone else getting the title shot? Is it T-Hawk maybe challenging his partner? Who could you see becoming the next champion?
That's kind of another problem with this company. They really haven't built up anybody that feels like the next guy in general. It feels like we're just kind of, you know, going on a hamster wheel with this promotion. You know, nothing's really moving forward in general. And I think that's been a big, big issue to where, like you said, who knows where this title reign is going at the end of the line. I'm a fan of long title reigns. You know, I think they really messed things up in the early going with Lindemann, but I will give them credit. You know, probably, I think around probably that Doki match, I think they've done better with him and tried to, you know, I don't know if it's been very successful just because I thought the early goings was such a bad title reign early on. You know, with how, just not his matches, but just how they used him and what they did with him. But now, I think they're doing a lot better the last few months with him, and hopefully it can lead to somewhere good and things pick up again. But they still have the rest of the roster to worry about. The only guy who I think has been really, like, consistently a dude that is always picking up wins and always looking good is Izuchi, you know, overall. Like, but at the end of the day, it's another question. Like, with somebody like him, he's already had his title shot. Now, granted, it was back in July, but I think he's a guy that they probably took the most care in protecting. And obviously, like Bulk Orchestra, they've done all right, but they are the tag champions right now. So I would like to see them break away from all of that. And I think Tamura on his own, there's much more life to him than the tag team they have, which is a fine team, but I think that there's actual money with Tamura. Yeah. I always thought that 60 Seconds should have had the titles, the tag titles, Tancho and Sato. And I think that if they can get there and push Tamura, I think he just feels like a great champion in the making if they could get behind him some.
Will also be a great closure to this title run because it, of course, started with Lindemann beating Hayato Tamura in the tournament finals back in February. And then he basically went through the entire roster, Quiet Storm, Shigeyori Irie, you mentioned Itsuki. Andrew Tang, even in Singapore, Doki, Takanori Ito, and Kaito Ishida. So a lot of guys from the roster that he beat already. So going back to Tamura in the next couple of months could be the way to go. But yeah, yeah. ultimately agree that this company, we've said it on the in the year-end awards as well, they have a lot of issues. We pointed out some of those, and it always feels like when they feel like that they are inside this hamster wheel, they inject something from the outside to make up for it. For example, these luchadors, or Shima bringing in this meme wrestler, or other people coming into this company. Much like I said in the year-end awards, it feels like that they really don't know where they are leading. They have this guy behind them that pays them a lot of money, apparently, that has a lot of money, but they're really not benefiting from their booking right now.
And it sucks because they had so much potential at mm-hmm. one point. You know, it felt like they were going to be something where they could be the next big thing, or at least like a strong indie, you know, like top-level indie company. And, you know, I don't think they're anywhere near where they should be. I mean, if you look at their numbers, I mean, they're low, like on the total poll. Like, well, you know, me and Dean on our Noah year-end show we did on the Patreon, we had this this attendance calculator he deserves the credit for this, to be honest. But if you look at Gleet's numbers, they're way down the list. Like, you know, they're
running these tiny buildings a lot. Most of their shows take place in this Umeda Sky Hall in Osaka, or even in Azalea Taicho, also in Osaka, where they can fit 300 people in.
Yeah, and I felt like in my mind, at least, especially when they had that, I remember that first show they had with New Japan, when Sho was in the main event versus Ito. I really felt like this company was on the verge of taking off. Now, you know, to be honest, it was a lot of weird stuff. I still wonder, in my mind, I know this is something that has long been forgotten probably, but I just wonder how smart it was to start this company literally in the middle of the pandemic, where it was like no fans in attendance and stuff. You know, very, very tough restrictions going on. I really think they would have benefited by waiting and coming up with better plans, like overall, because it feels like, you know, all of their creative juices have ran out of gas months ago.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Well, that is something we'll keep an eye on in 2023. Definitely not as hyped anymore as I used to be for great shows.
Yeah.
A show that I'm always hyped for, Dylan, is the Toshi Koshi Pro Wrestling event that takes place on New Year's Eve from Curricon Hall. This time drawing 615 fans, I was thinking, due to restrictions, maybe. I wasn't sure about that. I didn't read anything about it, to be quite honest. It is a 6-man tag team shuffle tournament with 4 matches in the first round and, of course, the semifinals and the finals. In between, they had an 8-man tag, which was a comedy match, and they had another 8-man in the semi-main, which was much more of an indie kind of multi-man match with Kara Noir, Drew Parker, Konosuke Takeshita, and RSP defeating the Big Japan team of Yuji Kobayashi, Taku Kato, Katsumi Kikuta, and Katsumasa Yoshida, which I thought was a good match. And I really liked the entire vibe of the show. In the end, I probably would have given the win to the Team Motorcycle, which was Mao, Yuko Miyamoto, and Yuya Oki. They had this video where they were drawn. They always do this draw before the event where they pair up teams. And they were paired up and they immediately saw, oh, we all like motorcycles. They made a vignette out of that. They had a special theme song, so I would have really loved them to go over in the main. But it was a team of Yuma Oyagi, Yuki Ueno, and Daichi Hashimoto that won tremendous matches throughout the show. I want to say I really also like the team of Higuchi, Kota Sekifuda, and Musashi. They lost to Team Motorcycle in the semifinal. I also was a big fan of the team that was with Harashima, Masashi Takeda, and Yuki Ishikawa. I thought they were good. Lots of cool teams along the way. It's always a fun time to watch this show. This is usually the first one that I watch each year. You can just sit down. It's about a 3-hour show and just enjoy great multi-man wrestling because, man, 6-man tag team matches, they are great. Or they can be great.
Yeah, that's true. They're not always great.
No.
Yeah, they can be. But yeah, you know, this show is always, this almost feels at this point like something, as much for the wrestlers as much as the fans, you know, where they can have fun on these shows, do different things than they would normally do in their promotions, and, you know, have unique matchups you'll never see for the rest of the year. That's always the fun part of these kind of shows. There wasn't anything I would say was very special in the ring, to be honest, but everybody seemed like they were having a good time, you know.
That's the entire vibe of the show.
Yeah, exactly. Over again. But I thought the main event was like really good, actually. Like, overall, I thought that was the best match on the show. Why is Al Yagi allowed to be in this? Because it's said that it's supposed to be Big Japan and DDT.
Man, they also had Musashi from Michinoku Pro.
That's true. That's another outsider. But at least that's a more of an indie company. Like, you know, like All Japan is a traditionally big company, and they're just like, will him in there?
Well, traditionally, it was a big company. Let's keep it at that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not big now, but when you look at how they cover Japan wrestling, it's like All Japan still gets lumped in, like, yeah, with the Noah and New Japan. So,
I mean, they also had All Japan guys in Great last year, so why not?
I object to Al Yagi.
What do you want?
Yeah, well, he did win. I'll give him that. And that's the thing. It was an unfair advantage, I think, for the secret team overall. But no. Like I said, I thought that match was really good. The rest of the show, there was interesting stuff and like fun teams that you won't see in any other point. So that's the big draw of this show every year to me, is like random teams, fun stuff. You're probably not going to get a lot of great matches, but the guys themselves will have fun. And I think that there's appeal to that.
So that concluded the year for Japanese pro wrestling, and the year opened with Pro Wrestling Noah. The new year, 2023, they are building this great tradition to kind of mirror what New Japan is doing with their Tokyo Dome show on January 4. They picked January 1st for their first big show of the year, and it is rapidly, I guess, becoming a tradition for also fans from overseas to come and watch the show live. And it's really a great feeling that with All Japan not really being in the position to do that anymore, at least a lot, it's cool that Noah is able to fill that slot of running Budokan shows while New Japan is doing their dome shows or their stadium shows. Very traditional thing, too, with All Japan doing that in the 80s and 90s, of course, too. So for this one, they had a sold-out house. It was the biggest attendance for a Budokan show since Kobashi's retirement. 9,500 fans was the official attendance they gave. It looked packed. And, of course, we had this main event that drew a lot of attention with a great Muta losing to Shinsuke Nakamura. Both guys, especially Nakamura, I've got to say, got tremendous entrances. That was a big part of the presentation of the entire show and of the match, of course, big appeal of that match. And another big appeal of the match, of course, was the mist that was used. There was a lot of smoke and mirrors. That is something that was used a lot in a description of the match afterwards. I enjoyed the match. You really couldn't expect anything really special from it, but they sure, in my opinion, delivered what you could expect. And I guess that's all that really was needed, because these guys, they just started off the match and just showing that they are so incredibly charismatic that they can carry a match with just that. And so, yeah, that's what helped them through this main event match, I would say.
Yeah, it was a spectacle, you know, and I think that's what we all kind of predicted going into it, that the atmosphere was going to be really strong. They were going to have a lot of bells and whistles to it, and they did. Like you said, the entrances were really strong. The fans even broke the rules of the clap crowd there as well, and just made noise anyway. So you could tell that they were really into this. This was a big deal, and I knew it would be. There was no doubt in my mind when this was announced that this would not be this would be a legit sellout overall for Budokan. You know, the match itself wasn't for me, to be honest. I wasn't interested in it going in. I wasn't interested in it. I thought the finish was like mind-bogglingly stupid at the end of the day. And then it...
yes, it was something.
And then it led to a homophobic promo to close the show.
I saw that and I just couldn't believe it. I misunderstood him saying that, but no, I did not.
No, you understood right.
Wow.
Yeah, what a way to end this, you know, big show, you know, like this biggest show you've had in 10 years for Noah. What a way to end it. I saw that and I was just like, man, you know, it's just insane. You know, like,
yeah, it's completely insane. Yeah.
Yeah, right. just ridiculous, to be honest. But, you know, like, what, you know, it's just a crazy thing that would happen. Probably definitely soured the mood for a lot of people, I would say, justifiably so, sure, in this case. But, you know, like I said, I didn't have any emotional connection to this match at all, personally. Like, I was never I was never that big on either of these guys as other people were in general. You know, maybe Nakamura in 2009, but the Nakamura that everyone knows and loves, I always thought was not as great as everybody says he was, outside of like a couple of times a year overall. And obviously his WWE run is just nothing to it at all to get excited about. And Muto, I really don't have a lot of respect for him in general as a person, and definitely not as a wrestler, I would say, at this point. You know, maybe 20 years ago he was great, but I have not enjoyed his run very much in Noah. Even from like a nostalgic standpoint, I have no joy watching him. But I know there was a lot of controversy about this being the main event, but I thought it was absolutely the correct call.
Of course. I mean, no question.
Yeah, like, this was why, like, you know, you mentioned this is going to be a tradition. I mean, we'll see how long that lasts, because without Muto involved, it's going to be tough, like, the way they do things, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, though. Yeah, though, they will definitely have a tough time following up on this show next year. Making a bold prediction, they will not once again sell out unless they get another legend to come in and fill the spot.
But you got to praise them, because they did, in this case, they did something that nobody would have anticipated,
right,
you know, going into it. They did what it took to get Nakamura on the show and sell out the show at the end of the day. You know, Muto versus one of the Noah guys is not doing this number. Mm-hmm. Like, Nakamura also deserves a lot of credit. His first match in Japan was a big deal to a ton of people. And I would say probably a majority of the people in this crowd came exclusively for that match and will not become Noah fans after this. And it's not because of anything wrong with the show, but just because they were there for this. And I kind of said this on the show with Dean. Those people can't be won over. Like, they, you know, they're nostalgia fans.
That is absolutely correct, yes.
Yeah, like, they're not going to be back long-term, you know, but it wasn't. And that's the thing, that's going to be interesting, because when they sell out this Dome show and they beat Wrestle Kingdom, which I'm very confident is going to happen, will we be able to say, after all of this stuff with Muto, because at the end of the day, they're going to have the prestige to say they did this huge Dome number with Muto. And, like, this Budokan show is cool, but the Dome number is what is really going to last, like, they can build off of, truly. When that happens, will it all have been worth it? Like, all of the damage that Muto has done to this company and how they've used him, will it all have been worth it at the end of the day? Because they're getting something that they never would have gotten without getting this retirement show, which could be one of the biggest shows of all time, you know, just because of his star power. I think that it's going to be interesting. And we still don't know what's going to happen on that show in terms of his match overall, because it's interesting leading into this. Again, I mentioned the controversy of the main event, but they actually leaned into that a little bit with Muto basically saying, well, my match is bigger than the title. You know, and like directly saying that, and all of
that's also something that you mentioned, the nostalgic fans coming in. Maybe also some WWE fans came in to see Shinsuke Nakamura, and what they saw was that match being the main event. Of course, deservingly so, much like you said, this clearly was the biggest match on the show.
Yeah,
and they tried to promote the GHC heavyweight title match as part of the double main event. But what people that came in, nostalgic fans and maybe casual viewers, what they saw was that the GHC heavyweight title match and the champion played second fiddle to the main event. He didn't even get to do a promo after the match, because he just won and had to leave right away, defeating Kano. So that's like what we said at the beginning of the show. We still wonder, are they really in for the run with Kaito Kiyomiya, or is there again something brewing in the background with someone else being positioned? You always have to keep that in mind. So that is what the casual fans coming in saw from the champion of the company.
Yeah,
that supposedly is going to lead the company, and of course, for future shows, should be the headlining act.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to pull out something really special for him at that Dome show. And where I was kind of going with what I was saying earlier, it felt like a little bit that they were teasing them having a match, like Muto and Kaito, like that being his retirement match, like almost. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen, but it's something that they teased at least going in. I really thought we would have they were going to do some kind of angle, you know, maybe Go coming back, you know, set something up for Kaito if they were going to do that. I mean, while they did have an angle, we'll talk about it in the show, but definitely not a main event angle, I would say, overall. But they didn't really do anything like that. We have no hint on who Muto's facing at the Dome. They're, you know, they're running out of time. They basically have until that Yokohama show, and I think we have to know who that, like, what that match is going to be. You know, is it going to be a singles match? Is it going to be some kind of multi-man deal? Like, what's going on here? I really thought that they would have used this platform to set something up for that.
From the way they announced it, I really think it's going to be a six-man tag with Sting and Darby Allin.
I thought they were doing that at Yokohama.
Oh, that's Yokohama, right? Yeah, right. Yeah. Yokohama, right. Yeah, they. Yes, that's Yokohama. True. Yeah, so I don't, no idea.
They're going to need a big match for this Dome.
probably will be a singles match. Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, they can't just phone it in. I mean, it's Muto retiring is a big deal, but they're going to have to do something special for this overall. And there's a lot of options. We'll see what they have in mind or what he has.
How many options are there, really, for the big singles match in the end?
Well, I mean, you're right about that, actually. I mean, I would say, I think the Kaito one would be interesting, to say the least, just because I think you could put doubt in him retiring with the title on there, which would be chaos if that happened.
Not impossible.
Yeah, it's not impossible, but it's chaotic. And I think it would actually do a lot for Kaito if he actually won, you know, at the end, even though I don't think whoever will be a good match overall. Like, there's nobody who can have a good match with Muto, no matter who it is, to me. Okada was kind of the name I was thinking, because here was my thought process of this. Who is bigger than Nakamura's return match in Japan? Nobody. So that's the best we can do is Okada, you know, overall.
Hey, wait a minute. When I said that, you said that Okada would be bigger.
Well, that's the only match that could be bigger at the end of the day. It's for a title match. And, like, you know, but nobody else could possibly be bigger than Nakamura. So that was really what I was thinking overall. Like, that's the biggest possible match they could have is Okada, you know. But, I mean, we don't know. Like, there may be political issues with that. You know, maybe Muto demands that he wins his last match.
Yeah, and then the IWGP Heavyweight Champion will not be coming in for that match.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, I'm not saying that that's true, but that is something that we, like, can think about as a possibility. But we'll see overall. Like I said, I wish that we could have seen some kind of hint on what they could have done, or what they had in mind for that, because I think that's going to be such a major show for them that I hope that they have their ducks in a row, and this isn't just some fly-by-night booking show, which is kind of where a lot of their shows end up seeming like, including this one, for the most part.
Yes. This show was structured so weirdly. First, we got to talk about the semi-main. Kaito versus Kano, what did you think?
Oh, epic match. Like, great wrestling, very well-paced, big, you know, big bumps. Everyone's going to point to the Falcon Arrow on the apron from the top, which was devastating. And it looked great. I just think Kaito is such a fantastic wrestler. This guy deserves to be the top star in Japan, in my opinion. But unfortunately, I don't know if that's even possible. Like, even if they get behind him at this point, I still wonder if it's just not too late already. But he's a tremendous performer, I would say. And Kenno is also a great wrestler as well. and I think he was a good opponent for him here. I was very cold on this match coming into it. It wasn't very interesting to me. We had just seen it a few months ago, and I think it would have been a huge stunner if Kenno had won this match. So I wasn't super invested in the outcome either, because I was very confident in Kaito. But the work they did was so strong that it ended up becoming the diamond of the night, pretty much.
Yes, that is absolutely true. I think the match itself lived by its great spots, but also by the intensity between these two guys. I mean, they've built up this rivalry nicely throughout the year. While it wasn't really the best rivalry to go with, which is why we didn't really call it out in our awards, it was still a rivalry that kept brewing throughout the entire year, and you could really see it in the way that they worked with one another. Really like this Tiger Driver version that Kaito bursted out in the end.
That should have been the finish. That's exactly
what I said. And not the weird Shining Wizard stuff.
No, I hate that stuff. But this is this is literally the exact kind of move I said that he should do. I said this on the Patreon because I remember when Marufuji debuted the Tiger Flosion.
Right.
You know, combining the Tiger Driver into the Emerald Flosion. I mentioned that I would like to see him do a similar move where he combines multiple moves of Misawa's into one move, which is exactly what he did here. Yeah. And I think it would have been perfect if this was the finisher. Yeah. Like I said, if it were up to me, they did give him new music, which I think is a great thing for him. I would have gone all back to the green. Bring back I Am Noah, Misawa finisher, like new era, like this, like
call it the Tiger Driver 23 and
Offenbach. Sure, excellent, like perfect, like a great idea, like new era, new generation of Noah. This new generation of Kaito, like forget all the old crap that you saw in the past. This is me now, and I'm a champion, and I am Noah. Like, for real, I am Noah, you know. I think that would have been how I would have done this. Instead, they went back to the Shining Wizard stuff, which I'm never going to like, no matter what happens.
It just looks stupid doing it.
Yeah, like, and I still think that they have a ways to go with him as champion, but wrestling-wise, he needs no improvements. He's one of the best wrestlers in Japan and in the entire world, and I think that he deserves a lot more than he gets in this company, and hopefully they'll finally realize the many errors of their ways and get behind him. But I think this rivalry is as seen, you know, this needs to be the end of this overall. Like, move these guys to something different. It's not just this year. It's something they built off of for 3-4 years at this point overall with these guys. You know, they were the main event of their first show back in Sumo Hall, the Battle of Aesthetics, like all those years ago. And they're still at this rivalry. It's time to move forward, I feel like, for both of them. And hopefully they have something in mind for some people. But never mind all of that stuff. As a pure match, it was awesome. I thought they did a great job.
Onto puzzling things on this card. Shocked is not the right term. I was puzzled. Yeah, I was puzzled by the fact that the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title took position over the Heavyweight Tag Team title.
Oh, this was ridiculous.
And we got another boring match.
Ogawa has to be one of the most overrated wrestlers, in my opinion. Like,
They had Eita, and they had Yohei, who had great chemistry in the match, and Casey was in there, and they still couldn't manage to get a great match out of that.
We've seen this variation of this same tag match, this same stinger, BS, garbage, boring match. With Ogawa, whether it's a Hayata, whether it's Kotaro, whether it's Ridgeway, now it's Eita, the same lame, boring match that everyone has to slow down for Grandpa in the ring here because they couldn't go full speed like they could have if he wasn't around. I hate these matches. I hate Stinger so much. It's one of my least favorite factions of all time. No matter what variation of this match is, I can't believe they put this over. And why? There was no angle for
no.
it. That was my speculation. Like,
terrible. Well, they did the same angle that they have done with Ogawa before as he walked out on his partner.
Terrible performance from Ogawa. Like, I hated this whole match. I think it would have been so much better if they had had another team besides Stinger team. Like I said, I don't care who it is. There's no other team that could have been worse, in my opinion, than what they do. I'm sick of Stinger. I'm sick of Nosawa in Stinger now. I'm sick of all of this. Why was this the third from the top match? KZ is a tremendous wrestler. We all know that. And, you know, Eita, he sucks too. Like that, like he sucks. And Noah, he's,
yeah, he's
bad.
Not good.
But, no. Yeah, like this match.
This entire run since he left RED has been a black hole.
Absolute garbage. Like this whole run, it does nothing for the junior division.
It does nothing for him. At one point, when he was Dreamgate champion, it seemed like that he could really become the next ace of the company had they turned him face, but they did not.
And that's what I called for as well, but unfortunately they did not hear our pleas, it looks like. This match was not good at all, and I did not like it, any part of this. And I'm sick of these matches, and we're going to have to suffer through more of them. And even when they lose the titles, I know that we're going to get another Stinger title reign out of this, like we've done for more than three years at this point. Like, we've seen the same crap over and over and over. Like, it's the same thing. There's no hidden hand movement. There's no ace up the sleeve. It's the same crap over and over. And, you know, I just thought it's very unfortunate that we're continuing this run. They're going to drop the title, and then Ogawa's going to come back with Hayata or some other yes. partner of his. And when the title's back again, and we're going to do this same movement over and over. I hate this faction.
It's Ogawa's fifth title run since 2020 with various partners, mostly with Hayata, once with Ridgeway, and now with Eita. And, yeah.
I hate this faction. And I did not like this match at all. And I don't think a lot of people did, to be honest. And I definitely think, like you said, it doesn't make any sense why this was up here. I guess it was out of respect or something. But even then, I don't know.
Shouldn't you respect Kenta coming back more?
Yeah, exactly. Like, even then, yeah. Like, yes, 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 yes. All of that is true overall. Like, so, and, yeah, bad match.
It's so great that we had this tag title match because at least one tag title match was great. I mean, I completely loved this match. It was so amazing. It started out with Sugiura and Kenta just slapping one another, just ragdolling one another, disrespecting one another. It had many, many great moments. There was this great attempt of a doomsday device with Maro Fuji doing the it's not the sliced bread, the Shiranui. This was balls to the walls action from the first moment on throughout this entire match. They didn't have a long, like, cutoff sequence where they got a hot tag in. They just went all in from the get-go, and for the 18 minutes, I thought it was great.
Now let me talk more about how much that junior match sucked for a second on here, because compare it to this match, and another reason why that match was so bad, it's not just because it was slowly paced. There's great matches that don't have fast paced, but the problem is it looked like nobody even cared in that match, where there was no sense of urgency, no pushing of the pace, no desire to win. And this match, it wasn't like this was some spot fest, fast paced match. But there was urgency in this match, where it felt like these guys wanted to beat the hell out of each other, at least. And I was appreciative of that fact. I don't think this match was as great as I had it in my mind, to be honest, because when I came in, I was very hype about Marukin returning and reuniting and all of this. You know, but it was a good match, I would say. I think it was very enjoyable as well. I just think that maybe they could have mixed things up a little bit more. And maybe that's a part of the story they're telling, where Kenta and Maro Fuji weren't really on the same page in this match. I think you mentioned that he is, representing Bullet Club there. We talked about it a little bit, or said something about it. I was talking to somebody about it, but yeah. They specifically mentioned he was representing Bullet Club in this match. So this is like New Japan Kenta, and they're telling a story with Kenta and Maro Fuji. I just would have liked to have seen classic Noah Kenta do stuff, which I think we got a little bit more of last year against Inamura in that tag match. And I think here they were telling more of a story with Kenta and Maro Fuji. But what they did was still really good, where you had Kenta and Sugiura. And Kojima, I thought, looked really good as well in the match. I mean, Sugiura and Kojima are awesome. Anyway, I've liked all of their performances and all of their matches. Sugera is just a tremendous, tremendous wrestler. The other two, I think, you know, they're good when they put their best effort into it. And I think here was about as close to that as we could get. Yeah. So it ended up really working out overall. But I do think it could have been better if we had gotten a little bit more of classic Noah Kenta rather than this, you know, partner dissension kind of deal they were trying.
Yeah, I can see that. Still, though, I really like the action and I like the approach that they just did this and went all action. It was cool. And all action is another topic for the final title match on this show, GHC Junior title. Amaxa defended against Yuta Miyawaki. I really think that they have something going with Miyawaki. If they play their cards right with a new look that he has, I think that this guy can be a junior ace for them. I really like the pacing of the match, liked everything that Yuta Miyawaki put to the table. I think he looked strong, maybe even stronger than the champion in here, because in the end, the champion escaped with a cradle, and Miyawaki really looked shocked afterwards because he thought he had the match won. So great performance from Miyawaki. We should look out for him to be more of a player in the junior division next year or this year.
Well, history shows us that that will not be true, and they're going to screw everything up by the end. So I have no faith in that.
Well, but yes. Thank you for your great hopes.
You're right,
yes.
But I will say this match was completely awesome. Like I thought this was like clearly the second best match on the show. I was a huge fan of this whole thing. I think these two have great chemistry together. Amakusa, this is a guy I've been calling on to be the face of the division for years now. And they finally gotten around to it. It took him like 2 years past when they could have. But now he's in. I think his gimmick is an upgrade over what he was as Hau. I think he's got like very motivated. I thought his match even last month with Dante Leon, I thought that was Leon's by far best match that he's had in Noah going in there. I thought they had really good chemistry. He has good chemistry with everybody because he's like a tremendous talent. And somebody like Miyawaki, what you said is totally accurate. This is the player that should take the division to the next step, you know, for it. And I hope that Amakusa gets a long solidifying title reign to the point where we can look at it 8-9 months from now. They can roll this match back and finally Miyawaki will be ready to carry the division. I think it was the right call to have Amakusa retain the title here. I think he's got a lot of gas left in the tank and a lot of great fresh singles matches too. Like they could do title matches with him. I hope that he carries this title for a while, solidifies the division, and then Miyawaki, if they play their cards right, like you said, he's a guy that can be a junior ace if they want to get behind him because he's a great talent. He looked great here. Like you said, the new look was really good. He wrestled so good. I've always been a fan of his, even when he was a rookie player, but right now it definitely feels like he's right on the cusp of being that guy, and I just thought this match was fantastic. I thought it was like a really great start to the junior division this year after a pretty dreadful 2022.
Since you destroyed my hopes with Miyawaki, I'm going to destroy your hopes with Amaxa here too, Dylan, because you know how this is going to end. Hayata returning from injury. He will pin Amaxa in his return match, then demand his rematch for the title that he never should have lost to Ninja Mac. And off he is, going to his fifth title run as the GHC Junior Champion.
Oh, well, that doesn't ruin my hopes. I predicted that months ago that he was going to return to the Dome. So I don't know what you're talking about there. I definitely will foresee that happening. But, it's the same story with Noah as it always is. All of the talent is there, like in both divisions and in all the divisions. Like they have all the talent in the world. And even now they get, the star power of the Muto and what they've done with them. They've done a great job with that. They have the talent to be something special as a company. Unfortunately, they've done things so poorly that it's hard for me to get very invested in any of these guys. But at least for Amakusa, he does have the edge over the other champions and that this is his first title reign. So at least this is something fresh and new instead of something we've seen before or not, like it's not at its max level it could be. So far, again, we're very, like you said, very short into this title reign, and Hayata probably will come back and win. It'll be all Stinger champions once again, as they always go to. But for now, like this couple of weeks that he's had this title. It's been great so far.
It's been great.
And hopefully we see more.
So we had the angle that you mentioned. It followed up the match with Jack Morris and Timothy Thatcher, which saw Jack Morris winning, but Timothy Thatcher taking 95% of the offense.
Totally nothing match at the end of the day.
What was that?
No purpose to this match at all. And it kind of felt like a match that just ground the show to a halt. Honestly, I did not love this at all. And everyone knows my love of Timothy Thatcher. Jack has been a pretty decent addition to the roster and definitely gotten over with the NOAH fans. It feels like he's very charismatic. I've always praised his ability to advertise himself and get himself over, but they keep building this title, potential title shot with him. And I don't know how well that's going to go, but I do think whatever match he has next will be better than this one, which was like a, you know, 2-star special type of match, you know, like nothing to comment about it at all, I would say.
No. And then as Morris was leaving, it was weird how they kept showing Jack Morris compared to the GHC Everywhere title match, where Kiyomiya did not get a great aftermatch. Jack Morris just stayed in the ring, and he waved, and he went to the back, and everybody was wondering, what is going on here? And yes, Jake Lee's music plays, and he's out on the stage, coming to the ring, smiling, looking at Jack Morris, applauding, and they leave together, Dylan.
What was this? Who looks at Jake Lee and this is their idea for them? I mean, again, I kind of like Jack Morris. I it's not like I'm a hater of his or think he sucks. I think this match was not very good, but overall, I think he's been a fine addition to the roster. I have no problem with him, but this is how you date. This is your vision for Jake Lee and your company teaming with Jack Morris. What do these two possibly have in common? Explain that to me. What do these two have that makes Jake Lee specifically come here? And now in the storyline world of NOAH, he left All Japan team with Jack Morris. He's like, this is the one thing I cannot do in All Japan. I have to team with Jack Morris. So I must go to NOAH to do this. And I just don't know if that's a very engaging character trait for any wrestler to have at the end of the day. And it also says something about where they see him. Because your debut, this is as mid-card of a spot as you could possibly ask for. You debut aligning with Jack Morris, and you're fighting a second match guy in your first big match or grudge here. It's like they don't see this guy as a main eventer, clearly, in NOAH. So I have to wonder.
And it's even better. I mean, you mentioned the second match guy. It's, of course, Yoshiki Inamura. Inamura, he got his win here in this second match over Mohamed Yone. But now he faces this guy that debuted in the mid-card. And, of course, Jake Lee wins the match.
Well, there's no evidence they see like a main event player anytime soon with Inamura anyway. So
no, they should.
Well, yeah, they should. Anybody should, because he's like, again, he's one of those top tier talents.
And he got a pop, unlike Jake Lee did.
Well, I mean, and he's a top tier talent, unlike Jake Lee, is the problem. Like I said here. Yes, in a perfect world. There's an alternative reality where this show is main evented, where Kaito had a Shuri like title reign for the last year. He was protected, treated like the top star in the company, and he had this amazing story, and it ends with Inamura's crowning moment in the main event and wins the title here. Because that was possible in the era where Inamura was pinning Akiyama in there, or it may have been Marufuji, but he got the win over Akiyama and Marufuji in the title match, but in the Budokan match they had, their first Budokan show, where it was Muto and Shiozaki in the main event. We could have seen that there. We could have seen it with them versus Takeshita and Ueno. He was there. They could have built to a major moment, and they still could, but with so many, you know, misdirections and detours and fumblings along the way, it just won't mean as much as it could have. But yes, Inamura could be a champion, but again, I don't know why people look at him like he's a main eventer in waiting, because it's clear that they don't see him that way.
So how do you think this all came to be? So apparently Jake Lee told the All Japan office middle of last year that he was going to leave the company.
Okay.
Then it seemed like that he was going to New Japan. It seems like that he also wanted to go to New Japan. That is what I took away from all of this. But what I'm taking from this is that New Japan had no interest in taking him in. This is just me purely speculating what could have happened. So he told the office that he was going out of the company with the expectation maybe that he was going to New Japan, but New Japan said no. But then Jake Lee had already put his stock on the table for the All Japan office and said he was leaving. That the Noah offer came into place, and that was his out of All Japan. That is how I imagine how it went.
Well, you didn't take that from him. He said it publicly multiple times that he wanted to go to New Japan. Like, it's not like you read into some secret deal. He said it directly to everyone publicly here. I mean, that seems the most realistic answer that you can come up with at the end of the day. It's also interesting that on the show, they had a specific part of the show that was designed for a mystery person.
Yes,
and it was not him. At the end of the day, it was not Jake Lee. So it does make you think this is something that maybe wasn't a long-term plan that Noah had. You know, this wasn't something that came together two or three months ago. It seems like something that maybe was a little bit faster made. Jake in New Japan, I really don't know what to think. I know that there are people there that want him there, but it seems like there's also some people that don't want him there based on these actions. There was a report that came out the other day that said basically Jake was telling people that this is not going to be a long-term run in Noah.
They even put it in the Tokyo Sports article. He said that backstage. He said that after Inamura challenged him, he said, "Remember, I will not be here forever."
So that would clearly insinuate that he still wants to go to New Japan.
And that would insinuate that he had not signed with Noah, but he's on a freelance deal.
So where can they go with him? Oh, like in Noah, like where can this possibly lead to outside of this match here? And why did he debut teaming with Jack Morris or aligning with Jack Morris? That will never be answered, I feel like, no matter what contract.
No, I have no idea where this could lead, because I don't really anticipate them having great hopes for him, just given this way of debuting him.
Yeah, if they thought he was a main eventer, he's coming out after the title match.
Yeah, he's challenging Kaito, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like that's obvious. It's not even like a speculative notion. It just is what it is, basically. And maybe he can get his way up there in the company. Maybe he feels like, or they feel like, or maybe both of them feel like, you know, with Muto taking a step back after this Dome show, maybe they'll open up a spot or two. But there's also reports that the main event push may be going to the mystery guy more so than him on there if things break out in certain ways. So I don't know. It's Noah, so you can't say anything's for sure. But I do think his career, when we look at it, whenever this ends, his career probably won't end 5 years from now, but when his career ends, or we're just past all of this, you know, another year or two down the line, let's just say, it's going to be very interesting to see how all of this really played out, what happened with him, what went through his mind, like, you know, to this. And if New Japan gives him a spot, then obviously, in all honesty, I'm really rooting for that to happen, because this guy clearly wants it so bad that I hope that they give him a chance overall. But as of now, what we see, like, you know, what we have seen in our lives and his comments and the reports on the shows, I just don't know how successful this run is going to be for him And it's also worth mentioning that he came out basically the same as All Japan, Jake Lee. You know, like no changes whatsoever, which I think was a mistake as well.
He should have gotten a complete makeover and debut as a new guy. Just leave everything that he had in All Japan behind and just be someone else. But
he could still be Jake Lee. He just
just a different character. Yeah,
yeah. Just change the gear, change the look, new music. Like I want everything new. Like new finisher. Like you know, yeah. Like basically a new character completely.
But the question is, Dylan, is there really a different character within Jake Lee? Is he able to do that, or is he that guy that has now that has this character now and is not able to become someone else anymore?
I miss the old Jake. Like, just let me have the regular Jake Lee, like the one before Total Eclipse.
But apparently, there are people who believe that this is the way to go with him.
Well, I'm not one of them. This is all I can say. Maybe they believe that, but like I said, we'll have to see. I would have to say this debut, I think even if you're the most generous Jake Lee supporter, this debut did not fill you with confidence that he's on the run to a huge Noah run coming out of this.
Yeah. Well, that's Jake Lee, and you mentioned the other X. They brought in Hiroshi Hase, which apparently got backlash from his politician colleagues, saying what politicians always say in circumstances like that. He should focus on the more important stuff. I mean, he was in for one match. It seems like he's now on the roster page of Wrestling Noah, but that doesn't really mean anything that he could be in for a longer run, because I really don't anticipate that.
It was reported that he had a huge contract offer from Noah and a main event push in line. And he's already on the roster page, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know what's going to happen, but I honestly could totally see that happening, to be honest.
Sure, why not?
I mean, he moves better than Muto if you just look at his wrestling. But, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous.
I mean, we talked about him 2 years ago during the pandemic when the scandal was out for him being in this situation. I forgot what exactly it was. Wasn't it this visit to the to a group of teenage girls that had experienced sexual violence, and they somehow misconduct. I failed to completely put it together, but let me just phrase it that way. They didn't act the way that you would expect a grown man to act in front of teenagers, especially those who had experienced sexual violence.
Yeah, I remember that show. I had a pretty strong reaction to that when I heard about that. If that's still in the archives, that was a terrible, terrible action on his part, especially for somebody with power like a politician is a very bad thing. It was a very tragic thing, you know, to do when you are a politician, when you're taking advantage of somebody like that, and it's very unfortunate that the thing is, you know, we don't really know anything beyond that happened, pretty much, like, you know, in terms of what the outrage was in Japan or, you know, anything, which I mean, it probably wasn't very much considering what we saw here, or it just got swept under the rug. Maybe I just don't know. At the end of the day, you know, we're outside of all that. So we don't really know how they reported it, what happened afterwards or what. But we know he's still a politician, and we know he's still getting matches at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, no, and it's a shame because I was really I was actually honestly a huge fan of his as a wrestler overall. But yeah, that definitely colors everything, you know, sometimes with him.
Not only getting matches, he's getting wins too.
And like I said, I anticipate a big push for him, just knowing how Noah is.
And on top of that, over the other guy in O'Hara, that also has a very bad reputation because of apparently being within a circle that that's disrespected women very, very strongly, to put it mildly.
Well, yeah, you know, like, unfortunately, like, a physical assault there, yes, more than sexual, true, but, true. You know, like, you know, just a terrible thing. He's another one that I think as a talent, he's, like, an amazing performer, like, but, you know, obviously with something like that, you know, that directly impacted the business as well, like, that was within wrestling, you know, on top of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's another thing. It's like, we're talking about stuff we really don't know the full, like, how it was covered and things like that, or who knew what. Or, you know, like, who knew anything at the end of the day, you know, or how it was covered. Was it swept under the rug? Did nobody know about it? You know, like, nobody knows anything about that overall. But, yeah, definitely, I mean, us watching it, yeah, like, that's a crazy thing. But, I mean, it's clear that, I mean, obviously, in that circumstance, it's clear that really didn't have any effect on his career.
No.
You know, unfortunately, you know, it's one of those things where, at the very least, you wish there could have been an apology of some sort. In that situation. But I mean, listen, on this show we had a guy cutting a homophobic promo like at the end of the
show.
That's just like, that's right. Like it's clear that none of this affects them like in any kind of like moral way, which is obvious. Like that's true. It's not just Noah, that's true of every company, but even from a business perspective it really doesn't affect them very much, you know, because like if there was a WWE wrestler, like if Roman Reigns went on TV and said what Muda said,
yeah,
he'd be fired. Like that's all there is to it. Like there's no possible way that could happen. Remember the announcer on the Spanish commentary that said some goofy racist crap against Karushita? He was fired immediately. Like you don't get away with that in America. So it's clear that that's like a completely different way of handling things over there. And you know, like Noah up and down their roster. You know, they're building, you know, quite a roster of some just very questionable people, to say the least, overall. But it's clear that, you know, it's clear it's not really affecting them nor the performers either. So it's just one of those things, man, you know. But still, though, any way you slice it, scandals or not, Hase shouldn't be getting main event pushes at this point in his career. So, like, all of it's just stupid. like all of that matches is dumb.
Yeah. There was one thing in the undercard that I liked. Other matches, they didn't really like the World on Fire. I thought the M3K match, Mochizuki Jr., his dad, and Susumu Mochizuki, they fought Atsushi Kotoke, El Hijo, Dr. Wagner Jr., and Seki Yoshioka. 10 minutes was a cool match. Apart from that, they had Yasutaka Yano and Taishi Osawa get a good opportunity to wrestle in front of so many people in the Budokan, but they only got 4 minutes, so there's really hard to put anything into a match when you get that short of a time. So, the undercard was what it was.
Yeah, like if you skip, if you start the show with, if you just watch all the title matches,
right,
then you'll have a pretty great show, although I really didn't like that junior tag match. But the other three, two of them were great, and I thought the heavyweight tag was good, and a lot of people thought it was great. So, not just you, but I like it has an 8.07 rating on Cage Match, so a lot of people really loved that match. And I think anybody would love the title match overall. The main event was a spectacle. Again, I really personally didn't like it very much, but I know that a lot of people will and did. So at the end of the day, if you just take the matches that counted, which is the traditional way of booking shows in Japan these days, like which is the top half of the show is what you really care about. The bottom half doesn't even matter, really. But if you just take that part of it, it was a very successful show overall. And obviously, from a business standpoint, it was extremely successful.
That is also going to be the approach for our final topic. We'll take the matches that counted for the first two shows of All Japan Pro Wrestling's New Year Giant Series 2023, both times in Kurikan Hall, one with 1,055 fans, and noticeably the show with the Triple Crown title match doing less than the one with the tag title and the Battle Royal in the main event, slightly less, but 1,041 fans. So on the first show, on January 2nd, they had a match that saw Yuma Aoyagi and Naoya Nomura defeating the Saito brothers to become number one contenders for the World Tag Team title, which got a great reaction from the crowd. Aoyagi rolled up Jun, who tried to do a choke slam on him. Nomura and Aoyagi, they also challenged Kento Miyahara and Takuya Nomura, who became new tag team champions after the main event. So that is a good title match to expect.
Right. So what are we talking about here? Like we covered a bunch of stuff all at once.
So we talk about first the number one contendership match for the tag title on the second, Aoyagi and Shinomura versus the Saito Brothers.
Oh yeah, okay. Like, so I was thinking about the world tag titles. Sorry.
Yes.
You know,
match was alright. Nothing to talk about.
I just wanted
to throw it on because it is notable that these two were put together once again after Jake Lee's departure. So Aoyagi once again is a new tag team partner.
Yeah, hope for the best, you know, for them.
Do I call it the best match of these two shows? I really, really was high on Atsuki Aoyagi versus Hikaru Sato. I thought the match was tremendous. I thought that Hikaru Sato's work, once again, put him over as one of the best workers in the entire country. These transitions from arm work to slick ankle holds out of Aoyagi's kicks, with Aoyagi also mocking the guy when he threw him out of the ring for his ground pose. I thought all of this, these 15 minutes, was just tremendous wrestling that not only displayed how great of a wrestler Hikaru Sato is, but also how they are able to put out Atsuki Aoyagi over a guy like him. And this is one of the strongest title reigns that they have had in recent times. So I really loved this one.
Oh, I'm totally with you. I thought that match was awesome. You know, Sato was my pick for Wrestler of the Year last year. And I think he's definitely started off 2023 and, you know, picking up where he left off on last year, pretty much overall. But, you know, Atsuki, I totally agree with what you said about his title reign as well. Like, this is a guy, he's doing great things in this division overall. And it's one of those things where you look at him, that's really, I think, the main issue with All Japan is not anything with their roster's talent, but more so just the depth of it, where there's not that many guys. But he's, you know, we saw it in the tournament where there was like six guys in the junior tournament. And I think that this was something where he's proving that he can get the most out of virtually everybody. And obviously Sato is the to me, he's the best wrestler in the whole company, just in-ring performer. You know, there's other people that are maybe better total packages, but to me, he's the best wrestler. So, and Aoyagi totally did his part here. I thought this was a great match, their best match together. And it told a great little story of Aoyagi finally getting his win over Sato. He's like the guy that he couldn't beat at all last year. Mm-hmm. And finally, first show in 2023, bam, beats him. No hesitation. Good match. Like, great match, actually. I really enjoyed this, too. I totally agree with what you're saying about it.
Now Atsuki has beaten Tiger Mask for the title. Of course, also first defense against Rising Hayato. But he's mainly defended against veterans. Now against Hikaru Sato and in between against Minoru Tanaka as well. Next challenger is going to be Kasayashi. And, of course, All Japan can never be trusted with these attempts from outsiders coming in. They often switch the title to these outsiders. We've seen it before. But I would really expect Atsuki to beat Kasayashi. I put it on Twitter. Naoki Doi has now said that he also has his eyes on the junior title of All Japan Pro Wrestling. And I think after Atsuki Aoyagi has defended the title against all these veterans, losing it to Naoki Doi would actually be a cool endgame, because Doi, of course, also an outsider, but seems to be like working in the company a lot now. And it could be a good story for Aoyagi to pick up again and maybe regain the title from Doi later in the year.
Yeah, I agree with that. Doi looks like they've already slotted a storyline with him with a new faction.
Yeah, he's in the stable now, right?
Yeah.
Suzuki-gun 2.0.
Yeah, it's Shin Suzuki-gun now on there. But yeah, like, it seems like he's going to be a fixture of the company, especially the junior division. I'm all for that. You know, all fresh matchups for Doi in All Japan. He can defend against everybody and then finally swing it back around towards a big show near the end of the year, have Aoyagi regain the title and solidify himself as the face of the division and one of the top players in the company overall. I think he's been one of the highlights in this whole company for the last few months and one of the shining stars of everything they've been able to put together. He's definitely somebody they've gotten right so far. So hopefully they continue that, and because I think he has a lot of potential as the ace of the division. And the division itself is getting there into where mm-hmm. it can be a great part of the company.
On the topic of Atsuhiya Aoyagi, in the match, in one of the matches on the undercard, you mentioned that there is this new Suzuki-kun. Minoru Suzuki and Naruki Doi defeated Shuji Ichikawa and Tokuto Omori, and Omori then joined Suzuki and Naruki Doi. And on the third, they had a six-man tag team match with Hokuto Omori picking up the win against Atsuki Aoyagi, so against the junior champion. And you could see it that Omori had bulked up in the last couple of weeks. You could really see it. So he beat the junior champion, but then did not challenge, but he's now moving up to heavyweight. So the story is, this guy went into the junior tournament, lost all of his matches, changed his gear, or changed his affiliation, pinned the junior champion, and now is a heavyweight. That doesn't really make the junior champion look very good.
Nor the entire division, some would argue. Why did they go this convoluted route when they had the opening when he had the first match with Suzuki? Like, that should have been his admission to being a heavyweight. After that, we could have not had him lose to all the juniors, nor beat the junior champion to set up to where he probably will not get a rematch against him. Now. So, yeah, I mean, this was really stupid. There's just no nice way of saying it. This makes no sense. I mean, I'm happy for him. It's something that I predicted. I said, well, why would they put him against Suzuki just to not move him up to heavyweight? And instead of just doing it the easy way and the smart way, they did it this really goofy way for some reason. But him as a talent, I've always believed in him. I think he's a great performer, somebody with a tons of upside to get behind him. And hopefully this group will ultimately benefit him the most and put him over by the end of it. But with how they used him, how he lost to everybody, it makes you really scratch your head kind of on what do they really see in this man? Because I don't know. I don't know what to think of what they've done with him so far.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Another head scratcher is the Voodoo Murders story, because they are kind of in the middle of a breakup. They threw Zuwama out, basically, on the third, after him and Kono lost the tag team title to Kento Miyahara and Takuya Nomura. 17 minutes, the finish saw Takuya Nomura tap out Kono to a great reaction of the crowd. It's really noticeable how Takuya Nomura has kind of risen in ranks in All Japan Pro Wrestling within the last weeks to the level that he has now challenged Miyahara also for the Triple Crown, and they are tag champs together. Great run for him, gotta say. I really love it. They beat the Voodoo Murders. They had this double team knee attack that they used once in the match. That failed. That also failed sometimes in the Real World Tag League. But in the end, the double knee attack that landed, that was one of the hooks of the match in the end. And and Kono looked like the sure winner with this choke bomb that he had on Nomura. But Kyo Iwata, who was once again attacked by the Voodoo Murders, just wouldn't count the fall, which also got a good reaction from the crowd. And Kono looked totally devastated by it and lost the match ultimately. So that was at least fun. And what did you think about this?
To me, this was like extremely average work all around, and something you hope they can move forward because you see the potential that Nomura and mm-hmm. Kento have to the team. Unfortunately, their opponents were who they were, and you're not getting a lot of good out of those guys at this point. Kono is like the most average wrestler.
He's mid.
Yeah, like the ultimate 5 out of 10 in every way. And he always has kind of been that, but now he's especially egregious, I would say. It's not like he's this horrible performer that ruins all his matches. He's very average and bland and uninteresting, which is a big problem. You know, them getting the titles, I highly approve of. I think that they're a great tag team on paper. And most importantly, it gives us more Takuya Nomura in All Japan Pro Wrestling, which is a great thing for them. And good for him, too, to wrestle other people that he wouldn't get to wrestle in Big Japan. The only kind of gripe I have with this, I don't love... Well, when he came out, it was really cool, like, to see him be double champion. But I wish that we could have seen maybe someone else get the title instead of Kento being the double champion, like teaming with Taya. But I mean, this team works. He has a great look with the double titles, and he's
Kento didn't even take the titles off in the Battle Royale. Yeah, three belts around. The tag title is around his shoulders. The triple crown around his waist. He is Mr. Gold Standard.
Good, and like that fits his character as this like, you know, like somebody who's great, but his ego is so big that it still is overinflated, pretty much, despite his own greatness, which I think fits him very well. So I'm all for this. I think he looks great. Like I said, I think if I were to do it, I would have had Nomura team with somebody else, maybe the other Nomura, like dual Nomura as tag team champions. But this way is not bad either. Like it wouldn't have been my first guess, but I think there's upside to this to be awesome. And I think that they're a great team to be the champions. And I think it's definitely the right call to move everything away from any Voodoo Murderers having any titles overall. So that's the biggest plus.
On to the second night. In the undercard, we saw
not... And hey, we have to mention too that Nomura won the Battle
Royale. In a great finish as well against Ryo Inoue, against the certified new kick boy. Right.
Inoue is my ultimate guy right now. I love this guy. Like a great wrestler. And what a great pairing. Hopefully they can run this back into a Ryo match down the line with these two, because they're like natural fits. And I just think that they're awesome.
Match next year, January.
Oh, I'd totally be down for that. I hope Takuya stays and keeps working for All Japan for all of that time as well. So I love that. And also, we have to mention Nomura, like the biggest winner of 2023 so far. He won back-to-back matches. And then all he does is win. Like, this is all this guy's about. But he deserves it. So have him win more.
Sure. Yes, the other Nomura, on the second night, he had a singles match with Ryuki Honda, which was really good. It was a six-minute match. Our friend Jonathan was there in Kurikan. He mentioned that if the match had been longer, it could have been really great. But they decided that Naoya Nomura is the guy right now that gets these quick wins. So that's his role right now. And it's all right for the time being. And I don't think that a match in the undercard should really like be this great banger. For this positioning, this was probably all right.
Well, the good news is that hopefully Honda will get power from getting Dr. Jonathan's book, Gambaru, that I know he gave to him.
Hopefully he does. Because Shotaro Ashino is also returning, so the Gungnir of Anarchy will be reunited.
I just love Honda. I think he's awesome in everything he does. Great character, like super charismatic guy, great worker. Like, I just think everything about this guy. I really think he could be a main event player at some point. He's not really, you know, it doesn't feel like he's on the cusp of that with how they use him. But if they wanted to, it's kind of like Itamura and Noah. It's like we know if they wanted to, he could be that guy. It's just they haven't really gotten him there yet. But they've done a much better job with Honda in All Japan, for sure, I would say. And Nomura, he's great. I'm sure they're probably thinking, man, we need to do everything we can to make him happy. So he'll sign with us. So, yeah, we'll give him a quick win over everybody, sure. I wouldn't be surprised if he's very heavily protected in the next coming months, because he is working there a lot more since everybody left. You know, you'd presume Tajiri, you know, maybe was a political enemy. I mean, we don't know that for sure, but that's just a presumption there, you know. But I think he's going to be very well protected in all of his matches. And he's going to wrestle here a lot more. Even if he's not under contract, I think he's going to be a strong regular. And hopefully they can get him to sign, because I think he's important to the company. And what you said was right. It was a shortish match, but what they did was great.
I like him. I don't like his finish, though. I don't think that the spear into the jackknife hold looks very good most of the times when he does it. I would love if he went back to the maximum, to the Death Valley driver that he used.
The spear into the jackknife can be awesome, just not in this match. unfortunately, because I do agree that it, like you said, there are some guys that can take it and it looks great, and there's some guys where it's a little awkward overall. So I see what you're saying. I would use that against the right opponents, maybe, you know, overall, maybe not everybody. Make that a special finisher kind of, and then like you said, kind of bring something new out or go back to the maximum.
What followed was one of the greatest angles that I've seen in years and years. Atsushi Onita came out. Yoshitatsu was there. Onita gave Yoshitatsu the worst-looking DDT of all time. And then Yoshitatsu got jumped by the Saito brothers.
Man, you have a low bar for greatest angles of all time, clearly. I think we may be on a little different wavelength, but... I mean, it's fun whenever Yoshitatsu gets beat up. I think we can agree on that. And it's interesting seeing Onita in there doing his thing. And the Saito brothers are the Saito brothers. Yes, so this had a very confusing and odd mix of people.
Right. Nagata and Yuma Anzai came out for Yoshitatsu's save because they had to lose the next match to referee decision to the Voodoomers, who then broke up.
They had to lose the next match. I like how you said that. That was very accurate and good. But yes, they lost. Yes, they won and then broke up. So Suwama can't even do a job in his breakup angle. I think like the first show, the first night, I thought, okay, this is a cool show. Like, you know, like you had that great, you did a great junior title match, new champions. I mean, the match was okay. I didn't love the tag titles, but I thought it was a good match, like good championship hold. The Battle Royal was a lot of fun. They, who knows? I was wondering, because we didn't even mention it, but I was wondering if they were setting up some kind of goofy, like one-off Fuchi and Kento match, because Fuchi did get the win on Kento.
Right. Yes, he pinned him.
yeah, see, I'm not making this up, people. Oh, that happened. So I was wondering if they were going to do something like that, but I was thinking, okay, this is kind of a fun company right now. Seems like everyone's motivated. They got those cool tracksuits at the start with the red coloring on them. They look really stylish. And then this show came around. And between this and what we would see next, I just thought, man.
So... what came next was the All-Asia Tag Team title match. Kendo Kashin and Nozawa Rongai defeated Takao Omori and Masao Inoue in 15 minutes. And Dylan, you called out Yoshinari Ogawa for being slow, but Yoshinari Ogawa would be the Naruki Doi of this match.
And this, I think,
I just sat here in stunned silence because it was so incredible that they gave this match 15 minutes and it was a bunch of nothing. They brawled around the ring. They stared at one another. Sometimes they did some shake and roll around and Nozawa won with a small package. What the hell?
I think that's the main thought of everyone watching this was what the hell. And I think that, you know, I think it's the biggest blessing we could say on this show is that we're doing it so soon. I mean, this is the show literally ended a few hours ago. Yeah. I mean, if we had waited too long, I mean, look at all the zeros that could have came in on Cage Match rating this match. But right now it has no rating. So, I mean, there's still hope for it at the end of the day. But certainly I would say an early contender for worst match. You know, if we did a worst awards, this will definitely be a top contender so far.
There is no redeeming quality about this match.
It's like, I mean, the opposite.
Maybe there was some comedy to it because of Masao Inoue talking throughout the match, but that would be all of it.
You're just amused by Masao Inoue just existing.
It's amazing, right?
That's all you need, and there will be comedic value to it. But yes. But certainly,
just put him there, and just have him sit ringside and look bewildered.
I think that is the absolute best booking idea of 2023 so far. Just have him sit at ringside all the time and beam us out in a way, and you will have gold on your hands. Unfortunately, he had to wrestle here, which is where it all fell apart. It was when he stepped into the ring. And yeah, none of the others. And Omori, I generally like him. I think he's actually been kind of motivated the last few months, but there was no saving this particular match. Like, that Noah match was unfortunately bad because Stinger is just I hate them so much that I could never like one of their matches or how they operate. This match was like, neither, like you said, there was no redeeming qualities at least in the other match, you can point to some good things, and it wasn't like the worst match of all time. It's just very boring. This was like one of the worst matches of the year, surely, by the end. And we can only hope that nothing tops this on that list. But Nosawa and Kendo, wasn't this dude retiring? What happened to his retirement? Why is he winning championships right before his retirement?
Because he's Nosawa Ranga and he has power. Because all of the juniors of his era have power now.
Yes, we
talked about that. Tajiri just won the Kyushu Pro Championship.
That's true. I thought, you know, I thought he was leaving the country is what I was promised. Well, they didn't say he's still going to wrestle and win titles elsewhere in these reports. And yes, all of the 90s juniors are corrupt and somehow have power.
Shima convinced the Glade owner to bring in a meme wrestler from the US for a 6-minute midcard match.
Well, I mean, we've seen goofy guys get brought over before in Japan. That's not as egregious as this, I would say. Like, this is something that never should happen. Like, never should be allowed or even discussed. That should even be allowed to happen. But somehow, here we are.
Here we are.
Big Kendo and Nosawa as tag team champions. You have to wonder what, you know... I mean, I don't know. I'm sure maybe it doesn't mean anything bigger.
No, it does not mean anything.
But it's still bad, though. That's the problem. Like, quality-wise, this sucks, even if it doesn't mean anything more. So why can't we have the All-Asia titles? What was wrong with Sato and Tamura having the All-Asia tag team champions? Why couldn't we have just had that for a little while?
You know what? Sato and Tamura, they wouldn't have the chance to defend the title in the Tokyo Dome.
And I have said for a long while now that I did think there was going to be All Japan involvement at that Dome show.
That will be one of the matches, I'm sure.
And that's a great point, honestly. Okay, that at least justifies this somewhat in my mind. Even though I'm never going to like the wrestling, that at least says there's logic to that I can get behind.
Maybe Hikaru Sato and Dan Tamura will be on the show winning back the titles.
Well, that would be wonderful to see Sato on the Tokyo Dome. There, very few deserve it as much as him.
Yeah. So that was that match. We had one more title match on that show, and that was Kento Bihara versus Takuya Nomura. Almost went 30 minutes. What did you think about it?
I really think that Nomura is a great addition to All Japan in all of his matches, but none more so than the main event matches. I think he's a guy that you could put in any slot. You know, anytime you need a challenger, he will always deliver great things because he's just such a great talent in the ring. Kento, he's the epitome of the champion, the ace of All Japan. He has been for a long time now, and he's got his style.
Yep.
Like I said, sometimes I don't like always love it. I don't always love it, but I do think that he's a guy that fits the role that he's portraying in All Japan as the ace of the company. He looks great. He has a lot of charisma. I think Nomura grounded this match a bit and was able to stretch things out without being boring, which I think is a very good talent of his. You know, this match went almost 30 minutes. I didn't feel like it dragged too much overall that it could have if it were in lesser hands. But I think that they worked together pretty well. They had good chemistry. This wasn't as good of a match as the Kaito and Kenno match, in my opinion. And definitely not as good as the Shuri and Julia match that we talked about.
No.
But it was a very respectable main event and one that I would not mind at all seeing revisited, possibly in the Champion Carnival. I'd love to see Nomura get a win over Kento to kind of keep him going, keep strong in the company itself. But in the match itself, I really liked what Nomura brought to the table. Great technical ability early on, kept things from getting boring and dry. And then the end was the climactic Kento finish that we always know in his matches. And it was a good match, like very good main event, I would say.
It's funny, like how in all these Kento matches, it's right around the 15 minute mark, whereas the most of the first 15 minutes, there is not a lot going on. They brawl around and they go to the ropes, they break and stuff like that. They did that here too, with of course the background being that they are tag team partners and they respect one another, so there is no early sheep shot in the ropes. Very respectful. But right around the 15 minute mark, you can always see in these matches that they immediately crank up the volume from 3 to 9 with them going very quick with these sequences with the knee and the German suplex. And they also once again incorporated this thing where they used the double knees in the tag matches, and they also used it here, but they, of course, bumped into one another. So these two not only have the great wrestling ability, but they also have very good comedic timing with one another. So that was cool, and of course, yes, finish was very stiff with these shots, with these slaps, and then, of course, the shutdown suplex hold being the finishing hold. It was a good match, I would say.
Yeah, this won't be remembered by the end of the year or anything like that, but I thought it was a good way to kick off, and it really kind of saved the show, in my opinion, because like I said, things went way downhill after that, those two matches in the middle. I thought the semi-main was okay, and interesting to see where they're going with this faction, but definitely from a show standpoint, the main event was needed.
You could say that the opener was the second best match.
The tag team match, yeah, that was a good match.
Dan Tamura and Hikaru Sato against Rising Hayato and Ryu anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I can get down with that.
Yes, not a good show.
Yeah, so better overall. I wish that the main event had been on the first one and you could have had like overall. But, you know, it is what it is. What were your feelings overall in All Japan coming out of both of these shows?
Much like you, I thought that they were off on a good start with the first show. But the angles on the second show were really mind-boggling in some aspects and don't really give me a lot of hopes for them in the next coming weeks, at least. They really need to get the ship back in smooth sailing, but maybe with all these angles, they are trying to get rid of their storylines in a way. But I really hope that they get something going once Shutawa Shino returns and they can have a better year, because they announced that they will be running a show on New Year's Eve this year in Yoyogi National Stadium number 2. So for their final show of the year. We'll see. How about you?
It's a great thing that they're announcing that all the way right now. It shows that they at least have something to plan to overall, similar to the Budokan show this prior year, although they didn't really plan to it, like with how it ended up playing out.
They have 1 year now.
Yes, we have an entire year this time instead of just 9 months. But I think it's a good thing. I think Kento as champion is fine and probably good for the fans of All Japan and you know, to the people in attendance. I do think that they could use somebody new to be elevated to his level at the end of the day. And they have a couple of options, you know, they could go to. I don't think there's, a great dearth of talent. Obviously, somebody like me, I think that Yuma is the main pick, in my opinion, that should be the guy. But he already won Champion Carnival last year, so that kind of puts a damper on my expectations on that end. We'll see what they do with some of these other guys coming in. Like I said, they have a couple of options. I'm sure they're trying to make some moves. Get some people, like, you know, I'm sure they want both of the Nomuras around as much as possible.
Yes.
Pretty much. And I think that's and why wouldn't you? Of course they would. Anybody with brain cells would know that. But I think that they have a lot of good things that they could do. Like you said, the angles with the Voodoo Murders and the All Asia titles, definitely, that was not good at all. But I do think your explanation of the All-Asia titles, if that comes to pass, I can forgive this awful match that I ended up watching because of it, because that at least makes logical sense at some point. That's all I ask for. I just want to understand what you're doing. I don't even have to like it at the end of the day. And I do think the one good thing is the Suzuki-gun, faction. Yep. I think that this has the potential to be something fresh and cool. I hope that this is not Suzuki getting any kind of title run, because I just don't think that's a good call in any sense of the word, but I want them to use this to elevate Hokuto, because he's needed something for a long time now, and it finally looks like he can. Doi will be very interesting, and I think you have a lot of fresh matches from Doi.
You know who the fourth guy should really be? One guy who really also needs elevation, who isn't really doing anything right now, he's on his own. It should be Rising Hayato.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, him and Naoki Doi as a tag team?
Yeah, I can get down with that, surely, because, Hayato, he's a guy that I think's had a great run this year, really improved, great gimmick. I think he really gets the most out of it. Put him in this group, and he fits kind of a more heelish slant, too, with these guys instead of the babyface version, so I think it could totally work as well. I think you could do a lot of good things with that group. I'm all for that. Do you think that this will be like Suzuki-gun, where it's like it turns into this 6-7 guy group? You know, because I'd rather just be smaller.
Yeah, 4 or 5 would be the maximum.
Yeah, and I honestly think these guys as a trio would be fine, but if they wanted to add somebody else, I think that putting Hayato in there, like you said,
I always think the perfect stable is a veteran, an up-and-coming guy, and a tag team, and that would be just it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like I said, you could also have, you know, Suzuki and Omori be a tag team as well.
Sure.
If you know, later on in the year, if they, you know, the Strongest Determination League, you could do something like that too. So I'm kind of excited about this, to be honest. I think this is much more interesting than Suzuki doing something in New Japan and just kind of rehashing all that he's done.
There could also be a potential Triple Crown run for the Suzuki.
Well, I don't want that. I think that's the absolute. I literally just said like a minute ago that that's exactly what they shouldn't do. I think that's a bad idea in every sense of the word. Overall, this group needs to be focused on elevating Omori.
Yeah, that's true.
First and foremost. I do not think he's world championship level at the end of the day. But I'm interested to see what they do at least. And like I said, this is much more interesting than him doing something in New Japan at the end of the day. And who knows? Maybe if there's a fourth member, it could be one of those guys that you know, come over.
Oh, yeah, Kanemaru, maybe. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, not just Kanemaru. It could be any one of them besides Zach. Yeah. Like, obviously, Zach will be in New Japan, but the rest...
Taichi returning would be very interesting.
And they kind of teased that
a
bunch already as well. If they wanted to get behind that, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do with all of those guys.
Taichi and Kento would be a great rivalry.
And Taichi and Yuma, I think, is the one that has the history. You know, Well, so you know, you could do a lot. I think Taichi would be better off. Again, much like Suzuki, I think he's much more interesting potentially in All Japan than if he just stuck around, you know, rehashing what they've already done. And I think it would be a good fresh start for some of these guys that, you know, there's probably going to be some changes in New Japan. I said it before that they have done a lot of things different than we've seen in the past. I think there's going to be some guys that are on the outside looking in as we see more young guys get pushed, as that is the initiative that they're on right now. I think there's going to be some guys that, maybe not the outside looking in is probably too harsh, but they don't have a place in New Japan, so they try to go elsewhere, or they just take some shots now and then they can bring in as a special member. Like, you know, even if Taichi stays in New Japan, you know, for that big show, they can bring him in as an unofficial member of this, like, loyal Suzuki guy and put him on the card in a match. I could see that being a thing, too, as well. So that's something to keep your eyes peeled. That was my main takeaway from all of this. Like, that's the one interesting thing going forward. I want to see what they do with this group.
Yes. So the next Kurikan Hall show is on the 22nd of January with the main event Kento Miyahara and Tokuya Nomura against Yuma Aoyagi and Naoya Nomura, and the All Japan Junior title is also on the line with Atsuki Aoyagi defending against Kasayashi, plus a bunch of multi-man matches, and Toshitsuo defends the Gaora TV title against Minoru Tanaka, Dylan.
Well, this is the title that I think the secret sauce that All Japan's been missing is this Gaora title, and Toshitsuo's back. What will be his role in the Voodoo Murders angle?
Will be to put over Minoru Tanaka and then go out.
Wow, no love for Toshizo here. A great champion, in my opinion. Like, fantastic Gaora, title reign, the stuff of
best
legend.
Best run so far, yeah.
You know, it's definitely been... I mean, he's had the title, he's wrestled matches, and he's won matches when he's defended this title.
That is a factual statement.
Absolutely. So I think nobody can argue with that.
No.
But what will they do going forward? That's a big question overall. But, yeah, you know, I think that the tag titles will change hands there. Actually.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because I think the Kento Miyahara Takuya Nomura team eventually was just a replacement winner because Shotaro Shino got injured.
Yeah.
And they took the titles off the Voodoo Murders. They would have done that either way. And now it's time for Aoyagi and Nomura. Also to spice up Aoyagi for his upcoming title match against Miyahara, because he challenged him after the match.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. They did this thing after the match, you know, where Aoyagi came out and then Nagata came out. And basically, Yuma is positioned as the warm-up guy for Kento to beat to get to Nagata, more or less. So,
yeah.
Kento will beat Yuma and then have a big match versus Nagata, which is unfortunate that they use Yuma in this way. I kind of think he'd be better off just not even challenging for the title.
But there's just not so many guys.
And that's the main problem, like, bringing you back to what I said at the start of this whole segment, is that the talent, it's not like there's no talent here. It's that there's not that many of it, you know. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah, they have Ota Watt in March, so that will probably Kento versus Yuji Nagata.
Yeah, I was exactly thinking that same thing. Like, they'll do Yuma next month, and then challenge them. Yeah, perfect. But I do think Yuma and Naoya will be a good team as well.
Yes. All right. So much for this. We've been going long, but it was important to get all the stuff in because there is Wrestle Kingdom looming. There is other Kurikan Hall shows that happened this week that we'll talk about. So there will be much more to discuss when Dylan and I will return later this week to review Wrestle Kingdom and what else comes up to our minds. So yeah, thank you, Dylan, for once again putting up with me. And it was a great way to start the new year.
Putting up with you, I love you, man. What are you talking about right now? don't be silly. This is a new year of Eastern Lariat. I'm fired up about everything. I'm going on 0 hours of sleep right now. On the return, there was a big storm during the night, so a lot happened and I couldn't get any sleep. So hopefully I didn't say anything too crazy on the show overall, but like I said, you were great as always as well. So thank you for being on the show with me, and thank you, the listeners, who are always the true MVPs of the Eastern Lariat, as we saw in the year end awards. And hopefully you guys enjoyed the show, enjoyed what we had to say, maybe even got a little entertainment value out of it as well.
Hopefully.
And I cannot wait to talk about Wrestle Kingdom. I think there's going to be a lot of interesting things to talk about. The Corcoran shows, let's go for it. I'm all for it. And it should be a lot of fun. Good stuff ahead. And I cannot wait for it.
So that is the Eastern Lariat for now. Thank you all for listening and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.